The third Aliyah of Parshas Vayeshev contains one of the most consequential episodes in Jewish history, the sale of Yosef, which is the paradigmatic Avera ben Adam l'Chavero, and has consequences that continue to reverberate throughout the generations and throughout Jewish history. And the Aliyah begins telling us about the boar into which Yosef was thrown, and we find here the phrase, v'habor reik, ein bo mayim, that the boar was not only empty, but there was no water in it. And that seems redundant, and the Gemara Maseches Shabbos and Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph tells us, and Rashi quotes, that while there was no water, there were snakes and scorpions in it. And this is to make the point, as the Ritva and others comment, that there was an objective miracle in the fact that Yosef survived such an experience, which is considered automatically fatal. And this is perhaps also relevant to Chanukah. This Gemara appears in the middle of the Sugyas of Chanukah, and it's a topic of much commentary as to why it's there. And there is extensive literature explaining the connection to Chanukah that can be found in this phrase. One of the more common explanations is found in the Torah Tamima over here, where he notes that the relationship is to the din that the Gemara has right next to this particular citation, where the Gemara says that a menorah that is more than 20 amos high is no good. And the point being that one doesn't look that high, it's beyond the view of person's perspective, and that's also relevant here, because the boar was more than 20 amos deep, and therefore the brothers weren't able to see that Yosef survived this experience of being there with snakes, and had they seen that, they would have recognized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was clearly with him, because that was objectively miraculous. The Gemara in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph Mar Aleph says somebody who falls into a pit such as that, we can testify that his wife can remarry because he's for sure deceased. So that type of miracle such as that, if they had seen that he had survived such an experience, they would have recognized the special hashgacha that he has. But more than 20 amos, one is not able to perceive visually, and that's why we find also when it comes to Chanukah that a menorah that is so high is not sufficient for the purposes of the mitzvah. The Meshech Chachma sees also here a connection, perhaps in a more fundamental sense, to what Chanukah is all about. The Medrash, the Rishis Rabba, tells us that when Yosef came back from burying his father, he saw this boar, and he had intention regarding this bracha, regarding this boar, to recite the bracha that the Mishnah talks about in Maseches Brachos and Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, that one who sees a place where he merited a miracle should recite a bracha. However, as the Abadram notes, it has to be an objective miracle that is beyond the boundaries of nature. And therefore, it was specifically at this opportunity that Yosef was able to make a bracha. Yosef's life had involved many miracles. The fact that he rose to such positions of power in Mitzrayim, so that was miraculous. That involved HaKadosh Baruch Hu's protection. But there wasn't necessarily one episode that one could point to as overtly miraculous. So he had to wait until he was at the site of this rescue, where he should have been considered, by all rules of nature, deceased, and his rescue was objectively miraculous, that he's able to make the bracha. And this parallels the concept of Chanukah, because when it comes to Chanukah, really what we celebrate is the fact that we prevailed in the military conflict, where the odds were so daunting. And that was certainly miraculous. However, it's a miracle that doesn't necessarily have a point that we can look to and say this is specifically beyond the boundaries of nature. And it's possible to think that this was something that just occurs naturally. So we point to, instead, the miracle of the Pach HaShemen, which may not necessarily be as significant as the military victory, but is overtly miraculous. And that allows us to recite a bracha and to take note of its miraculous nature. So there is this direct parallel that just as Yosef is able to make the bracha specifically here at the boar, because it was undeniably miraculous, because it would otherwise be considered impossible to survive an experience of being in a pit where there are snakes and scorpions. So too, we make the bracha regarding the Pach HaShemen, which was overtly miraculous, while really having in mind to include everything else that led up to that, the military victory and all of its significance. The Kli Yakar has a comment over here that suggests that the brothers actually did know about the snakes that were in the pit and thought that this was an appropriate punishment for Yosef and for his Lashon Hara. We have such a notion, as the Oznayim Latorah points out. The Gemara Maseches Erechin suggests that the snake symbolizes the speaker of Lashon Hara, the punishment for Lashon Hara, and that perhaps that's what they had in mind. But he goes on to comment that since Yosef was doing it for reasons that he considered justified, the reports that he brought about his brothers in the beginning of the Parsha, so therefore he survived and got off with just fear, without having to actually suffer that punishment in actuality. He also goes on to comment that Chazal say that they were judging him as a rodef, the brothers were judging Yosef as a rodef, but in actuality there was no mayim, meaning there was no Torah behind their judgment, it wasn't justified, but instead it was an act of revenge, and that is symbolized by the snake. The Gemara in Maseches Yoma says that a Talmid Chacham sometimes has to take revenge compared to a snake, so therefore the snake is the symbol of that midah, and that's a remez that we could find perhaps in this language. So to move on to Pasuk Chaf Hei, so here we see a reference to the Yishma'elim who were passing, and it talks about what was being carried by their camels. So the question is, why do we care what was being carried by their camels? So Rashi quotes B'Chazal that this is to emphasize that their merchandise had a sweet smell to it, and this is to show the Schar Tzadikim that they are saved from having to endure a bad smell. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz comments on this, that this certainly wouldn't seem to really be a redeeming aspect, considering that he's being sold here in its totality, but rather the point is to emphasize that every little aspect is something to take note of, and if we can reduce the suffering to any degree that one has to go through, or if there's any small advantage that one can be grateful for, so indeed one must take note of that, and that is the message that is being conveyed here. And the next pasuk, the pasuk Chavav, so the Torah tells us that Yehuda said to his brothers, "Ma betza ki naharog es achinu v'chisinu es damo." So what do we gain from killing our brother and covering up his blood? So there's much to comment about this pasuk. This language of "ma betza" is the focus of a discussion the Gemara has in Maseches Sanhedrin in the first parak and Avav Mar Aleph, where the Gemara is considering the topic of pshara, which is sometimes translated probably inadequately as compromise. And the language of Bitsua has that connotation. And here, commenting on this pasuk, so the Gemara says, whoever is Mevarech Yehuda, whoever blesses Yehuda, is Menayitz, making a reference to the pasuk in Tehillim, Botzeya Berech, Neitz Hashem, that somebody who blesses a compromiser is blaspheming God. So it makes it sound here as if this is a criticism of Yehuda, that Yehuda was compromising when he should have gone for a complete victory, a complete salvation of Yosef. But there is clearly much to consider about what he possibly could have accomplished given the odds here and given the challenge here. And the Maharsha discusses, based on the language of the pasuk in Malachim Aleph, that Yehuda felt that he couldn't have done anything more than this, that the brothers wouldn't have listened to more, so therefore this requires respect. So ultimately, the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin comes out that pshara is actually a good thing, and the word compromise really is not an adequate translation. Rav Soloveitchik explained in his shiurim that a pshara is not a compromise, but rather is a judgment that factors in the aspects of lifnim mishuras hadin. And this highlights the fact that when we talk about something in the area of compromise, there are good ones and there are bad ones. There are those that actually do factor in all of the considered elements and come out with a result that is the best for all sides and that is actually in the path of Shalom and Emes together, a mishpat of Shalom. And there are compromises that are negative and that don't actually bring about the necessary goals, while perhaps giving too much to that which is negative and damaging. And of course, this is on everyone's mind right now with the situations that Israel has to deal with and the questions of how to negotiate and how to deal and what kind of deals are appropriate. It happens to be that many years ago, Rav Nebenzahl gave a sicha about this, discussing this point about when there is a proper kind of deal and an improper kind of deal, and what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate. And this is relevant to Hanukkah as well. And he suggests that in the context of Hanukkah, so there's much discussion about why there was any need for the miracle of the Pach HaShemen. Pnei Yehoshua and others raised the question that we could have lit with impure oil, Tuma Hutra B'tzibur, and he suggests that the message is that sometimes we're not supposed to compromise, and that sometimes we are able to push for doing everything in the proper fashion, even if it could have been possible to get away with less. And that is a necessary message to political leaders. So to know exactly what kind of a bitsua is appropriate and what kind is damaging requires a lot of wisdom and das, and that's part of the discussion here. So in any event, to go back to his entire phrase, when he says, Ma betza ki naroge sachinu v'chisinu estamo, in the Paris Yosef, he quotes an interpretation that Yehuda was making the point that if somebody is going to kill another person, so there might be three reasons why one might do that. So one might be pursuing profit, but here there's no profit, there's no betza. It might be done for revenge, for nekama, but here, this is their brother. How could you feel that there's a need or appropriateness to take revenge against your brother? Ki achinu here, as the next pasuk says, ki achinu b'sareinuhu. And sometimes the purpose is to scare others, is to make an impact. But here we're going to cover it up. So how is that going to be effective in any way? So therefore, nothing will be accomplished from this. The Sefer Yad HaMelech, in his commentary to Sanhedrin, Parak Tezvav, writes that Yehuda was making the point that if you, the brothers, feel that you are justified in ruling that he is Chayiv Misa, so then you must do so in public so that others will learn. If you're going to cover it up, so then you're not going to accomplish anything, and that's going to undermine your sincerity. So just to look ahead here in Pasuk Chav Tes, so Pasuk tells us, Vayashav Ruvain El Habor, that Ruvain came back to the pit, and the Medrash tells us that he was doing tshuva regarding the incident with Bila, and Rav Soloveitchik comments that the relevance here is that Ruvain saw the impact that his disrespect for Yaakov in that incident had on his brothers, who then took from there that they can act disrespectfully to others as well. And once he saw that, he realized that he needed to do tshuva for his past behavior. So we find here that Vayitbalu Esa Kutones Badam, the Pasuk says, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, that they dipped the coat in blood. Rav Soloveitchik comments that the brothers felt that they needed to permanently destroy this coat, which had been the symbol of Yaakov's favoritism. The Znayim LaTorah has a comment over here that normally one couldn't prove somebody had died just by showing their bloody clothing, because it's possible they may have lent their clothes to someone else. However, in this case, Yosef's coat wouldn't have been lent to anyone else, so therefore they could use this as a convincing proof that indeed Yosef had died. The Aliyah tells us towards the end here that Yaakov, when he was told about what happened, he refused to be comforted, and the Maseches Sofrim, Perachof Aleph, tells us that one can't receive tanchumen on someone who is still alive. And the Sefer Ohel Moshe comments about this, that the reasoning behind it is that the missing person himself is also thinking about reconnecting with his family, and that creates this bond. And he discusses there how there is a remez to the distancing between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jews, and how we, by keeping alive our desire to be redeemed, are able to create that ongoing bond. And the notion is also one that was discussed by Rav Dessler in his Michtav Miliyahu, where he comments that the expression in English that time heals all wounds is actually incorrect, that it's not a natural process for one to recover from suffering just because of time. It's actually a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He suggests that's why Ashkenazim have the nusach at a shiva of saying Hamako Minachim, to talk about the place in contrast to time, because it's not something that happens automatically with the passage of time. It is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that gift isn't there when the individual isn't actually fully gone. Beyond that, the whole comment of Yaakov refusing to be comforted is symbolic about the ongoing effects of this Avera. It's a topic that was discussed at great length by Rav Shlomo Fisher in his Sichos Beis Yishai, and there is much to say about how this Avera specifically really represents all Averos ben Adam l'chaver, the Mashiach Chacham and others comment that when we want to talk about an Avera ben Adam l'makom, we look to the Egel Hazav, and we want to talk about an Avera ben Adam l'chavero, we look to Mechiras Yosef. And the elements here of rationalization and justification and the way one views the intentions of others have a lot to say about all of the ways in which we mistreat each other. And that perhaps is why this is held up as an example of interpersonal averos and why its impact continues to resonate throughout the generations. There is a comment of Rabbeinu Bachya that the Meshech Chachma finds very difficult. Rabbeinu Bachya writes that the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen is considered to be a kapara for the sale of Yosef. And the Meshech Chachma notes that seems very difficult to understand, because if that's the case, so what happens in a Pidyon HaBen is somebody who is not a descendant of the tribe of Levi ends up giving money to a Kohen who is a descendant of Levi. So here Levi was a part of the offense here, was a part of the sale, and Yosef was the victim. So what would happen here is in a Pidyon HaBen is that a descendant of Yosef theoretically would end up paying a descendant of Levi who was the offender. So how would that be any kind of atonement for this incident? You thought it was a very difficult comment. And perhaps we could suggest that it's not meant to say that there's some kind of reparations here, that the descendant of the offender is paying off the descendant of the victim, but rather there's a symbolism that he's referring to, that the brothers of Yosef, when they got the message that Yosef was destined for greatness, they found that to be threatening. They found that to be a problem, and they schemed to get rid of him. And the question is, how do we correct that attitude? So the notion that a Bechor was destined for greatness, was destined for the Avodah, and the question is, when a father has a Bechor, and he's told that this is the destiny of his son, so how does he relate to that? Does he want to hold on to him? Does he want to let him go? The whole nusach of my boy's tvei, what would you prefer? So the idea that the father expresses his desire to hold on to the son who is destined for greatness and not to consider that to be a threat or a reason to fear him is perhaps itself a tikkun for the Avera of Mechiras Yosef. And it's one more reflection of the idea that the attitudes that we bring to others and some of the biases and the concerns are great contributors to the ways in which we mistreat each other. And the tikkun that we strive for in the wake of this Avera is to try to rectify these attitudes and to look for all the different ways in which we can correct our perspectives so that the mistreatment that's represented by the sale of Yosef does not recur again in the future, and that we can find redemption.